Bé, molt bona tarda a totes i a tots. Gràcies per estar aquí. Soc Ismael Palacín, el director de la Fundació Jaume Bofill, i us dono la benvinguda en aquest debat d'educació. Portem més de 10 anys, de 10 anys intensos, amb ponents molt interessants, molt intensos, ponents que ens han ensenyat i ens han ajudat a aprofundir i albirar molts dels eixos de debat futur de l'educació. Alguns futurs encara segueixen sent futurs, altres futurs d'aquests 10 anys, per sort, hi hem arribat, estem plenament immersos en ells. Aquesta és una iniciativa que impulsem a la UOC, la Universitat Oberta de Catalunya, a la Fundació Jaume Bofill i al MACBA, el Museu d'Art Contemporani de Barcelona, que a més ens acull en aquesta fantàstica sala. Ja us dic que és una aliança que ha durat 10 anys. Fa més de 10 anys vam dir que havíem de portar gent interessant de tot el món per ajudar-nos a aprofundir, a forjar, a debatre conjuntament, a pensar en veu alta sobre molts dels temes que configuraran els propers horitzons de l'educació. I avui estem en un d'aquests. Dos o tres recordatoris abans d'entrar a tema. El primer és que els qui sou partidaris de les xarxes socials i del Twitter us convidem a utilitzar la connexió de la sala, que està penjada aquí en els laterals, i us convidem a utilitzar el hashtag debatseducació. Us hi convidem als que esteu aquí i també us saludo, aprofito per saludar-vos a les moltes persones que ens seguiu en streaming des de casa vostra. Sigueu benvinguts i també considereu-vos un participant més. Us animem als que esteu aquí a ja posar el cervell en mode pregunta, en mode aportació, per ja anar acumulant tot allò que després podrà ser un diàleg amb la ponent i amb tots nosaltres, i en els que esteu a casa també enviar-nos les preguntes via Twitter. Les recollim, les analitzem. De totes maneres, també, si no són preguntes i són aportacions, són links, són pistes per aprofundir, també les recollirem, també les elaborem, també les analitzem després. I recordeu que avui fem el debat amb el privilegi de tenir la ponent aquí i que al cap d'unes setmanes convocarem un seminari web en el que amb diversos experts locals aprofundirem en aquesta mateixa temàtica i, per tant, molts dels debats que avui s'hagin obert però no s'hagin tancat o molts dels debats que avui s'hagin obert però no s'hagin contextualitzat en el nostre entorn i no s'hagi aprofundit què cal en el nostre país, en els nostres centres, en els nostres mestres per fer algunes d'aquestes coses realitats, en el seminari web és una oportunitat de fer un focus ja molt més entrant a tema i amb aportacions molt més d'aquí. Entre elles, les vostres, que ens envieu a través de xarxes socials amb aquest hashtag, amb debats d'educació, i les que ara mateix surtin d'aquí. També aprofito per recordar-vos que al desembre, en el darrer debat, va venir Kristen Swanson. Kristen Swanson, entre altres coses, la presidenta de la Fundació EdCam dels Estats Units, que ens va parlar de l'aprenentatge docent entre iguals, del model de la Fundació EdCam. Des de llavors han passat moltes coses. Des de llavors hi ha, crec que, 15 EdCams, o que ja s'han fet, autoorganitzats per grups de docents o que estan programats per tota Catalunya, diguem, és a dir, ha tingut una conseqüència directa, vibrant i funcionant. Però el proper seminari web, que està previst pel proper 16 de febrer, de 6 a 7, és una hora clavada, analitzarem quines iniciatives d'aprenentatge peer-to-peer s'estan duent a terme al nostre entorn, des de Betacamps, EdCamps, els Innovars, els Meetups, els Hangout Edu, els EduHacks. Per trobar més informació podeu anar, com sempre, en el web de debats, debats.cat, on trobareu la convocatòria d'aquest seminari web i trobareu ja els ponents, el programa, us ho podeu inscriure i per dir-ho així, i podeu anar preparats perquè és un entorn d'un diàleg intens des de principi a fi entre participants ponents i entre participants i altres participants. I de la mateixa manera també us animo a recopilar, a tornar en el web debats.cat, on hi trobareu no només la Kristen Swanson, sinó els ponents anteriors dels altres debats, que en molts casos seran complementaris o annexes a la ponència que tenim avui. Bé, abans de començar, ho dono la paraula a Teresa Guasch. La Teresa, ja la coneixeu, és directora dels Estudis de Psicologia i Ciències de l'Educació de la UOC, que ens presentarà el tema d'avui i ens presentarà sobretot la convidada. I a partir d'aquí ja agafem la directa. Moltes gràcies. Teresa.
Gràcies. Com us deia l'Ismael Palacín, és un plaer doncs, avui per la Fundació Jaume Bofill i per la UOC i pels Estudis de Psicologia i Ciències de l'Educació poder presentar conjuntament aquest acte, però sobretot tenir avui la presència de la professora Kirsty Lonka. És un honor I com veureu ara, doncs, abordarem avui un tema clau i molt, molt, molt vigent en aquest moment a Catalunya. El debat d'avui, que encetem ara, ens volem centrar en un dels reptes centrals de tots els sistemes educatius, el qual és mantenir l'interès, la vinculació i la motivació dels infants i els adolescents. Es tracta de, sobretot, d'esbrinar quins són els ingredients bàsics per a generar un entorn d'aprenentatge motivador, el que ella argumenta com engaging learning environments, i que combati amb la desafecció escolar i connecti amb els estudiants, molts dels quals són nadius digitals que no se senten atrets per aquestes pràctiques pedagògiques que ens trobem actualment en els centres i alienes, per tant, a aquesta voluntat de voler aprendre. Malgrat el bon rendiment dels estudiants a Finlàndia, com passa en altres països en aquest moment, no és immune a la desafecció escolar. I molts estudiants també desconnecten, també que no s'enganxen al sistema i assenyalen que viuen les experiències d'aprenentatge personal i de col·laboració més estimulants fora de l'escola, com ella ens presentarà. D'aquesta constatació neixen un seguit d'iniciatives liderades per la professora Kirsti Lonka, que combinen els seus coneixements de psicologia, innovació educativa i formació de formadors. Deixeu-me també apuntar molt breument, perquè ho teniu a la xarxa i podeu trobar, doncs, tot el seu currículum, extès currículum, extès experiència i totes les seves col·laboracions, però en tot cas assenyalar alguns dels aspectes que ens semblen clau, i en tot cas també la podeu seguir per Twitter perquè és una persona molt activa a la xarxa. Ella és professora de Psicologia de l'Educació de la Universitat de Helsinki i recentment està nomenada Extraordinary Professor de l'Optentia Research Focus Area de Sud-àfrica i també membre del Consell Assessor de la Universitat Nacional de Ciència i Tecnologia de Taiwan. Una de les preocupacions centrals que ocupa la doctora Lonka és el fenomen de la desafecció escolar que abordarem avui i que qüestiona sobretot les pràctiques docents que imperen en la nostra societat i que d'alguna manera alienen els nostres alumnes que són nadius digitals. Fruit d'aquesta preocupació, ella estudia com promoure aquests engaging learning environments que ens presentarà i l'ha dut a terme i l'ha dut sobretot a la pràctica ja en la seva pròpia facultat en el projecte Living Lab Minerva Plaza, per futurs mestres, centrat en la formació de mestres. Un altre dels projectes que ella també lidera és el Mind the Gap, on examina els buits o discontinuïtats entre les ments dels adolescents en l'era digital i les pràctiques educatives que experimenten a les escoles. També voldria ressaltar que té diferents premis i diferents reconeixements, però sobretot cal mencionar també el de comunicadora de l'any 2012, que li otorga la pròpia Universitat de Helsinki, com avui podrem disfrutar també de la seva presentació. Comptem, per tant, amb un expert en el tema que avui, sobretot, li hem d'agrair novament l'oportunitat d'això, de que ara puguem encetar aquest debat, aquesta discussió sobre aquests temes que apuntàvem. Com us deia l'Ismael, ja és moment de posar-nos en mode de pregunta i de començar a plantejar qüestions perquè tinguem després un debat ben interessant sobre un tema que ens ocupa i ens preocupa a tots en aquest moment. The floor is yours. Thank you.
We will move there. Yeah. Bona tarda. Sorry, my pronunciation is not so good. I didn't want to put those earphones because I love listening to Catalan and I understand it much better than Chinese. In Africa, they even have this language, Darmana, where they are just speaking like, and that's really difficult. If you understand some Italian, French, Latin, then you almost understand Catalan, but I just love the sound of it. It's so falling like a river or something. Okay, this picture is very frozen. I hope I'm not going to be very frozen tonight. I'm very happy to be here. I've been in Barcelona previously. I've been collaborating with Professor Castello, Teresa, previously, and some of my instruments have been translated in Spanish and Catalan, and we published together. And there is a journal called Electronic Journal of Educational Psychology, and there are some articles that are both in English and in Spanish, and I intend to publish them more because I think it's wonderful that they are coming out also in Spanish. Somebody is asking me what makes Finnish school special. I think it's very much teacher education. So in the beginning, I'm going to say something about our teacher education, because what is very exceptional is that our Of course, our subject matter teachers have been already educated at the universities from 19th century. They've been studying mathematics, linguistics, biology, and so on. But already 40 years ago, almost 40 years ago, class teachers' education became to the university, and everybody must have a master's degree. And also in my classes of educational psychology, I have kindergarten teachers, and they must have a bachelor's degree. But if you want to be a director of kindergarten, then you need a master's degree. So we don't think that kindergarten is somebody where you put kids just to keep them there so that parents can go to work. But we think that kindergartens are pedagogical places. Very brief summary, if you don't know very much about Finnish system, as I said, the level of teacher education is one of the highest in the world, and also it's very difficult to get in to the teacher education. It's more difficult to get in than to medicine or law or engineering. And for instance, my students who study in this master program, bachelor, master, 5.5 years, they have to do also subject matter didactics in 14 different subjects. They specialize in two. But what is interesting in Finnish system is that we have very much handicraft, sports, handicrafts, arts, music, and these kinds of and domestic skills. So we learn how to cook, both boys and girls. And nowadays, both boys and girls go to technical work and the handicraft. So that used to be so that boys would go to technical work and so on. But now they are doing it together. Our asset and our problem is that we have very autonomous teachers. It means that nobody's watching what they are doing in their classroom. And they are highly trained professionals who are doing their job. And nobody's coming from the community to watch what the principal is doing. So it's very autonomous. The school days are quite short. Holidays about 3 months per year. My husband is an elementary school teacher, so it's nice. So sometimes he can follow me when I go abroad. We have hardly any standardized tests. The major first really high-stake examination is when people are 18. First they do matriculation examination, and then they apply to universities. And it's very competitive to get to universities. School starts at the age of 7. And before that, we have preschool program. But still, the main form of education is free play. So that, for instance, my children, they wanted to play Spice Girls. They were born in the 90s. So they have these projects that they're Spice Girls. And then their kindergarten teachers were assisting them with their project. And they spent very much time outside. Only when it gets minus 15, then they don't have to go outside. But usually they spend 4 hours a day. They usually do things and in the forest and go downhill and get very dirty. And it's not very civilized. So we always needed to put them overalls. But we think that promotes creativity. What is now going on is that we last year had a new curricula in Finland, very much 21st century skills, and also we are having a reform in teacher education. I've been trying to do that for the last 10 years. I came from medical education. I've been in Helsinki and in Karolinska Institute in Sweden, helping medical schools to become problem-based. But now helping teacher education to change is like moving a graveyard. Because it's very difficult to change something that is already good. And last week in London, I met some Japanese people, because the best PISA results this year were Singapore, Japan, Estonia, only 1 million people, Taiwan, and Finland. And I happened to be in Taiwan when the results came out. And there were people from Singapore and Japan and Hong Kong who were also doing well. And we were all scratching our heads because we feel that we are doing good things, but we are not doing good things for our students. We make we may get good results, but we are losing engagement, and that's what I'm going to talk about. Because our biggest challenge is to change the learning environment. I don't know, we are sitting here in this thing that we've been doing like 400 years, that there is this priest who is talking, and then there is this, you know, parish who is listening. But this kind of education that people are staring each other's necks, and then this kind of isolated offices where they're sitting. Well, this is how things have been like for decades, centuries. But when I went to cafeteria with Teresa today and with Val, we saw everybody sitting there with their computers. There was Wi-Fi and they were working very intensively. And if you go to Starbucks in Beijing or in Taiwan or Helsinki or South Africa, you can always find these people working there intensively. And what is our problem is this huge gap between what's going in institutional education and what's going outside. And that is a big problem. How many of you would think that your institution is more like on the left side? If you raise your hand in my class, I'm not, you know, start bugging you. I just want to know the frequencies. How many of you would think that your institution or school or workplace would look more like this? If you're coming from school sector, probably. Workplaces look more like this, more and more. If you go to Microsoft or Intel or somewhere intensive places, even factories look a bit different nowadays. Our problem in EU is to have these creative, active EU citizens who can solve very fuzzy and wicked problems in teams. Our physical settings, our social spaces, our technologies may help us or they may hinder us. Everybody knows what happens when the internet goes down or the printer doesn't work and you go to classroom and try to have a smart, you know, something and it becomes very dumb very soon. What is problem in Finland, in Japan, in many other countries is that school engagement worldwide is declining. What is keeping Japan and Finland and countries like that up is sense of duty. But we cannot play that card forever. Our girls in Finland are best in sciences, in the best girls in sciences in the world, but they hate it. Nobody of them wants to be an engineer. They are just getting good grades in technology. What's the use of that? Are we alienating our teachers with our practices? It's my question. And maybe you can already guess what I'm answering. How many of your children love school? Do they love it? Usually they love it. In Finland, they love it when they are 7 and go to school, but already during the spring term, they start to get bored. I don't know how much you like listening to this Finnish-Canadian weird accent here. How long? But usually it's 20 minutes that adults can listen. And then we are afraid that our kids are distracted because they cannot sit there for 45 minutes and listen to the teacher. I was in EU Parliament and this report I wrote is available on my website, and actually the executive summary is in all EU languages, so it must be in Spanish. I'm not sure if Catalan is there too, maybe not. But these are, I put them a bit together, actually there are 7, but these are our 21st century skills. Creativity is there, but it's not like, it's behind all this. Thinking skills, learning to learn, cultural competencies, communication skills and self-expression. I think you are much more sociable than we are. You are even much more digitally engaged with Twitter and, you know, all this that your rector was here and he had all these webinars and Twitters and hashtags and everything. Our rector is much worse. Research is showing if you are sociable online, you are also sociable offline. We are unsociable in 3 languages. So we really need this. Then even some youth have problems in taking care of themselves and everyday life, skills, everyday life. Multiple literacies it's not only text anymore, it's visual, Instagram, Twitter, different kinds of literacies, reading media, understanding what President Trump is saying. Well, that's too much for me. ICT competencies. You can have very good ICT competencies, but you can tweet bizarre things. You've noticed that. So it's not only about using technology, but knowing about safety and good ethics and good interaction. And then entrepreneurship. Only 8% of Finnish people are entrepreneurs. And they are trained by people like me who are like, you know, from the university, training teachers who never see any kind of business life. And that's one big challenge, is how to have this contact to business life. In Finland, there is something like entrepreneurship village, so that all sixth graders, 12-year-olds, spend one day in this business center and start their own businesses. What is really interesting, our immigrant students start blooming there. Finnish people are very often customers who go and buy things, and then there is this guy from Afghanistan and selling things, you know. And actually, same happened in Namibia, in Africa. They felt that they were a bit Finnish. Like, all these people from Pakistan come and start businesses, and Namibian people only want to have, like, salary jobs. And I don't know how it's here. But I've learned that Catalonia is the engine of business in Spain or in this area. So I guess you are very good in this too. But we need much more of that. Especially marketing is difficult for us. Do you know what this guy is here? He's a hikikomori. Actually, it's very much like buena tarde. This R in Japanese, hikikomori student. 600,000. 630,000. I just met Japanese. I checked, is this right? They used to commit suicide before examinations. Now they refuse to commit suicide, but they refuse to come out from their rooms. Imagine Japan and Finland. We have the same problem. We are getting gray. You know, we don't have enough young people. Japanese have it even worse. There is no immigration. In Finland, we have hard times getting immigrants because we are so crazy, who would want to come there. But imagine, he has a samurai sword to prevent the teacher coming and taking him to school. He only goes to washroom. And if you Google this phenomenon, you will find more about it. But still, there are millions of children around the world who are getting burned out and bored out at school. Very seldom, if your challenge is this high and your competence is here, then you're burned out. But if challenge is here and your challenge is here and your competence is here, then you're bored out. And what is problem in Finland is, in our Mind the Gap research is showing, that especially those boys who have very good technological skills, they start becoming cynical against school already at the age of 12. And the main PISA problem we have is that we are losing the boys, especially from north and east parts of the country. And I think this is a problem which is leading to Brexit and Trumpism and all kind of post-truth things, is that we are alienating boys from school system, which is run by ladies. And girls have their own problems. In Finland, our research is showing that girls are not getting cynical, but they are getting burned out. They both have problems at school. Girls think it's their problem that they are not studying hard enough, and boys think that school sucks. I don't know which one is better, but both start being alienated. This ends up with girls who are good at science but hate it. And that's the Finnish problem. So what is engagement? You can emotionally engaged, it very often shows if you are absorbed and time is flying and you are like in a flow. You can be cognitively active. Now you're sitting there and you are not telling or acting anything, but you may be cognitively very active and curious about what I'm saying and of what's going on in Finland. But you can also be acting in a way that shows involvement, or acting in a way that shows disengagement, or watching cat videos, you know, or doing something else. Disengagement with this, what I said, what is problem with girls? Exhaustion, feeling tired, lack of energy. With boys, it's very much in Finland, lack of meaning, alienation. And inadequacy means that you don't feel that you are good. You experience failure. And what is interesting, our research is showing that those boys who are very good in technology, they feel inadequate at school. You know, if you take your notebook and you have to make direct marginals with a pencil, they very often fail. And handwriting, maybe this and that, but then they are when they are gaming or coding or something like that. And so we have, this is one of our study. Actually, we paid 2,000 euros so that you could have it free, because it's a journal of psychology, European Journal of Developmental Psychology, I think. It's so if you click it, then you can load it, download it. But we found 46% of elementary school students feeling some kind of cynicism towards school, and especially those who had high, who were digitally engaged, and they all felt that they would be more engaged at school if school technologies were, if social digital technologies were used at school. So we've been thinking, what is interesting is if we talk about digital natives, I'm going to talk about that pretty soon. I should, because I have to finish. if we are talking about them, we need to talk about this digital challenge. You know, I'm almost over all this theoretical blah, blah, blah. The end of my show is then going to be big pictures, and they're going to be faster. I'm very, in Finland, we are very slowly warming up. But then when I'm getting a flow, then you have to carry me away. Okay, the digital challenge is this. That is my elder daughter. She was born in 1991. And many of my students were born in 1997. So they are very much digital natives. These people who are going to be teachers, students in the university. And this is a very, this digital native concept is very controversial. We actually published an encyclopedia book chapter on it with Kai Hakkarainen. The book won an award, so there must be something that we did correctly. We are not saying that they are better in using any devices. Commodore 64, are there any Commodore 64 people? Who were really, everybody in the 80s needed to know how to program computers in order to use them. Today they are very user-friendly. One-year-olds doing like this, happy. They don't know what is inside the machine. Very few of them can code, like maybe 10 to 15%. But what are they doing? They are multitasking. While they are listening to me, they may be tweeting and Googling more information and doing things. It's good if it has something to do with this with topic. They read from screen. I need these papers. I'm obviously an immigrant. they are very much chatting. Like they wouldn't go, they wouldn't send an email. For them, email is like old fashioned. It's like sending a postcard. They are not going to the bank office. That's like, what would I do there? They open the chat and they chat with the teller. And they think that's why business has to develop also that way. 25% are gaming, active gamers. They are very social digitally networked. They are only offline at school. School day for them is like, oh, please fasten your seatbelt and put away all the technical devices, and you may put them on when we've landed to New York 7 hours later. So they are basically offline everywhere else except school. and they are almost too dependent on their mobile devices. But they're developing strategies. Like my daughters, they would go to McDonald's, they would put all these devices in the middle of the table, put them, you know, the voices off, and then the one who touches the the mobile phone first is paying the whole bill. You know, so they try to regulate it, but many of them would need rehab. And selfie was the most common word in 2014, the word of the year. 2016, it was post-truth, which is interesting. So, but the problem is that school is very much designed by baby boomers. You know, when radio came, people were worried that now they don't read anymore. The telephone came, everybody was worried that now they're just talking on the phone and nobody's socially interactive face to face. I was born 1960s and my students were born 1980s. We're still the same generation with them, just like 20 years. But then my elder daughter was born, DVDs, digital cameras, all this came up. And then my younger daughter is already Z generation. She was born 1995 and she doesn't remember any time before internet and mobile phones and these kinds of things. So even these two are different generations. So it's being exponentially like this. No wonder we are burned out because they were so long when we all experienced DVDs, VHS, videos and CDs and floppy. Do you remember floppy disks? And oh, you know, it took so long. But then suddenly everything changed, and very much 2008 when social media started to become more common. So this is from my, you can find all these blah, blah, blah from my FEPS website. There is a direct link to this report. What I was telling to this EU Parliament thing was that it's not so much about learning technology or computer-supported learning. It's kind of last season thing. It's more like this integrated system with these novel technological tools and social media, internet, that enable people being constantly in interaction. And then we called about social digital participation. That is this informal ways of being in. For instance, I've been following tweets from Barcelona the whole last, and retweeting, and I've been social digitally participating, even if I don't even understand. I have to put Google Translator or ask my PhD student who is a Spanish language teacher. And then something is in Catalan and then I have even hard times. But anyways, this revolution has taken place during the last 10 years and we act like as if nothing happened. But in Finland we have noticed that actually in order to make this, what we are told that we must make now this digital leap, I think we need a pedagogical leap first. Because blended learning is not like people are listening to lectures and then they go to e-learning environment. That's not very engaging. This is a bit boring, but I put some our latest findings because what I'm telling that this is coming out very soon, this paper. Our students love their teachers. Pupils really think that they are the main source of their engagement. They are very good in face-to-face. They are very good in traditional pedagogy, even interactive pedagogy. But the only thing they cannot do, they cannot help them in digital engagement. They cannot help them in using technologies in a meaningful way. And then I've been looking at teachers' ideas of learning. So those teachers who are only teaching facts and certain knowledge, they didn't find these 21st century skills relevant at all. Where is place for critical thinking or creativity? And critical thinking doesn't mean that I'm criticizing other people. Critical thinking means that I'm critical to my own thinking. That I can constantly evaluate my own practices critically and change them. That's critical thinking. Usually we think it's criticizing others or some texts or something. Well, 70% of Helsinki area teachers had this kind of surface approach to knowledge, or giving certain answers to students. So I think what we need in epistemic change, we need changing in the ways of how we think about knowledge and learning. Do you know what is the most difficult sentence for a teacher in Finland to say, or a professor? The most difficult sentence. I don't know. Yes, I have to confess, it's very difficult for me to say I don't know. Nobody knows where we are heading, actually, with this digital leap or whatever. But we need to transform our physical spaces, our social practices, our virtual ways of interacting, our pedagogical models. We need to change our shared mental models of what learning and knowledge are, and what is critical thinking, and what is creativity. And also our technological solutions and our software, from monological culture towards more collaborative knowledge creation. That's what Finnish learning researchers have been saying for. We've been saying that for the last 20 years already. it's sometimes painfully slow, but now I'm increasing my tact. This is kind of models that have been trying to apply for their last 20 years and now developing, putting interest and motivation in there as well. Before you start teaching something, find out what people already know. That's typical in science education. Activate their minds, diagnose what they know, catch their interest. And then your task is to feed forward, motivate them, maintaining the interest, and constantly have this formative assessment. And summative evaluation should be kind of assessing conceptual change. And Teresa has been doing research on what kind of feedback is feed forward. It has to be informative, it has to be specific, and it has to be epistemic. It has to be like, what new you do know? What is interesting? What would you like to learn more? How the reader understands your text, making you evaluate what you already know and foster it. Phenomenon-based learning. Oh, I forgot we still have this thing. Because it's a very Finnish thing and it's confusing for our teachers. So in our new study plans, all schools must do at least one or two phenomenon-based projects per year. Koreans have this STEAM. People in Taiwan, Korea, Singapore, they are doing science, technology, engineering, arts and mathematics. But in Finland, it's even more bizarre. What we are doing is we are integrating like life and death. It's about what is life and what is death, from biological, theological, from the point of view of mathematics, expected life, or dying of hunger in different countries, statistics, but also art, experience of sadness, death, born in arts and literature and visual arts. How you can integrate. So the idea is to have this kind of integrated thought that you can think out from the box and not only like teaching mathematics. We are saying that we are not supposed not to teach mathematics, we should teach our students. And then if teachers together start collaborating and doing this kind of project, they start thinking more about learning rather than just delivering the content. And this is very difficult for our subject matter teachers. And we have a reform going on in our teacher training. So these are the pictures I promised. I started really being anxious about this because we were alienating. I had 400 students in my class. They were future teachers, but I didn't have tools to help them to be sociable. So we got this library space and we turned it over summer into an engaging learning environment, following that pedagogical model I showed you. So we can do phenomenon-based, problem-based, student-activating lectures, different kinds of designs. Here is actually a video. Maybe I don't have time to show it now. Do you want to see a video? How much time do we have? Yeah, because when I get engaged, I talk too much. But here, if it works, we can see that it's not about technology, it's about how you change rather than sitting in the lecture hall. If it doesn't work, well, usually nothing works. But here everything works, of course, because we are in Catalonia. Yeah, so you can watch this. It's a very engaging video, but it's 2 months on how people interact in this Plaza, different it doesn't show. Well, I just... No, the radio is saying them. I'm not changing it. How it I can see it very well. Maybe I just put it off. It's not... Now I've screwed up the whole thing. But this is what... This is actually a good example because the music is nice. This happens in my class constantly. And usually I ask some of our students to come and help me. Once I had these students who only spoke Russian. There it is. I'm sorry. It was kind of embedded link, so it sometimes crashes the whole PowerPoint. But this is what teachers are anxious about. They always should know, they feel embarrassed if something goes wrong, and there they are. Are you sure you want to watch it? Well, so here you can see that the social interaction changes all the time. And not everybody has a device. There is usually one or two tablets in each table. So the idea is that people talk, and then they share, and then they send their ideas to that big screen. And it's there are different kinds of ways. And this is not teacher's place. This is kind of, it's like what you have in airplanes, where you're directing the whole thing. Our technology person is there. And when people disappear, there are little rooms where they can go and deepen their discussions. Sometimes we are dancing there. Sometimes we are not using any technology at all. There's a concert. And this is Rovio, some playing thing or gaming. They're children. Can you imagine what we can make Finnish people so interactive? But usually, if people are very shy, they don't have to raise their hand. They can just throw their ideas, and then we can organize them together. There was a doctoral defense. It was a bit formal. You can say that you put the tablets there, and this is a doctoral defense. That's why they are like, it's like a ceremony. We can have 120 students. That's the whole class teacher kind of intake. We can have them at the same time. Now I'm afraid of touching it. What's happening? I should get back to my PowerPoint. Can I just escape? No? I have just some pictures for you. Because then... yeah, now we're there. This is... For instance, it looks like I'm constructing a concept map there, but it's actually the students who are sending all these concepts, and then we are collaboratively organizing them. And nowadays, this Flinger technology allows that we can, the matrix stays there, and we can take it up when we start the next session, and it's very flexible. But then we also, when we still had some money before government took it all, we also wanted to have students so that we don't have small groups with teachers only, but we have they have self-directed groups where they can also create knowledge. And we have a similar office space upstairs where we are working in the same way. And we are doing lots of things with our hands. We're making food, and this is gaming, and we can draw on the walls. And this is animation workshop. We're doing very much things with cardboard and music and painting and writing, and then taking making an animation with a tablet. So it doesn't. We have this microphone that we can throw, and if we had a big class, then you can. It's nice when people catch it, and it's a catch box. So trying to make more playful. Finnish people are not very playful. We are a bit too serious, and But I've seen what happens. These are, for instance, my PhD students who are with first-year students and with this business person doing different kinds of things. So sometimes it gets, this is our Harlem Shake, it gets a bit too wild even sometimes. But then when I go to developing countries in Africa, they start almost crying, like, is it very expensive? Actually, we didn't get any university money for this. Oh, actually, some building money and so on. But basically, all this technology and everything, we have to have different kinds of projects and companies and foundations to give us some money to do these kinds of things. But these don't need to be expensive. This is just an ordinary school. It used to look like this. These are my PhD students who had a project in Espoo near Helsinki. These are IKEA furniture and recycled furniture. And then actually, the technology is not very expensive because everybody can take their mobile phone or their own device from their pocket. And then people are saying, but not everybody has a mobile phone. In Namibia, the cover of mobile phone is 117%. I would believe that in Finland it's about 250. So that each person has 2.5 devices. So you must have some kind of phone, even if people in Africa would have a phone or some kind of device that you're using. Department of Mathematics was flipped. So that, you know, mathematics is very threatening. The professor is drawing on the blackboard and nobody understands, or half, 10% understand who are gifted. And then the others go anxiously calculating to their homes. But there is learned from the net, but students come to the Department of Mathematics to solve problems together. And these are fourth-year students who are guiding these. They come every morning at 9 o'clock and start calculating. And they calculate the whole day, and they really like it. And even girls have started liking mathematics because they have getting rid of that belief that it's for guys only. And then you can see who is teaching integral and who is teaching vectors and what you know when the teachers are present. And what is lovely about this is that all the walls and tables, because we didn't have money, they didn't have money for small rooms for everybody. So only first-year students are in this small room, and the others are in the corridors. And all the walls of corridors have been painted with this kind of painting, and all the tables. So they are just, they have formulas everywhere. And it used to be called cheating, but now it's called collaboration. So they can just leave this here, and the next team comes and, oh, how did they solve this problem? Why? How interesting. And how would we approach this one, and so on? And what do they mean, actually? So my conclusion is I've noticed these are not Finnish problems. These are global problems. I've been talking to people in Africa, Japan, Taiwan, London, Spain, Catalonia, wherever. There is this widening gap between schools and outside world. And the most difficult problems are in those countries who've been doing well in PISA results because they've had this illusion that they don't have to change anything, which is a very dangerous thing. Technological things, digitalization, automation, they are changing our societies and we need to change our ways of teaching and learning. And intercultural issues are very important. You know, Estonia, Finland, Taiwan, Singapore, they are not even countries. They are like country clubs. But imagine Canada. Canada is always in the top 10, and it's the most intercultural country in the world. Totally peaceful. I've been living there. I was never afraid of any people coming from any other culture. And they are very much investing in home languages so that everybody, for instance, there is a Toronto Finnish language school. My husband went to driver's test and they asked, what language do you want your questions? And he was just joking in Finnish. Okay, here you are. I don't understand how they do it. But we should go there, everybody, and study. Finland is boring. You know, it's very easy to all these blonde people. We have just like 10% immigrants, very homogeneous. But the main problem is to reform our teacher education and continuing professional change for teachers to make this change. And those who don't have trouble in keeping up with the technology, pedagogy, ways of thinking, automatization, Internet of Things, augmented reality, you know, all this. Those who don't have any trouble with them can raise their hands. I couldn't. I have more. Oh, there are my friends from Taiwan. But this is for the worst ghettos, I would say, townships. I've seen very student-centered and wonderful pedagogy in the worst places, like in Orange Farm, which is like Praetorian slum. And these are young people who were trained to make web pages in 2 weeks, and 10 of these people already has a job. Before that, they couldn't pay 60 rands to go to Johannesburg for work, but now they can work in their own township. This is not something that has to do with Western world. It's also the major change that we can do in Africa and in other countries is also to help students to become digitally engaged and create jobs for themselves and for the others. So this was on the wall of that center. Be the change you wish to see in the world. We always have these excuses. Yeah, we don't have computers. We don't have that. Our study plans, blah, blah, blah. But actually, when I go to Africa and they are doing much more advanced things than we are, then I really feel blushing of shame. All these complaints we have in Finland. We don't have enough money and we don't have this and we don't have that and government is cutting and blah, blah, blah. If you don't have any money, you just have to be creative. So we are building these schools in Africa and then they are sustainable and so on. Here is some information about our projects. And I got a bit carried away because this, as you notice, this topic is close to my heart. And I somehow was inspired with this Catalanian speech that was sounds so beautiful. So now it's time for you guys to talk to the person next to you in your own language or whatever. Do we still have time? And then kind of reflect if I was talking nonsense or whether it made some sense or